This is the year to stop overpaying for your family plan. So choose a Straight Talk wireless family plan. Unlimited data, talk, and text on a reliable 5G network. And you can get a new line starting at $25 per line per month for 4 lines, plus taxes and fees and no contracts. That's good decision making. Available at Walmart and on straighttalk.com. Family plan discount with 4 lines, all on the Silver Unlimited plan. Not combinable with auto pay discount. In times of traffic, your data may be temporarily slower than other traffic. Video streams at up to 480p. Willie Nelson, Waylon Jennings, Kris Kristofferson, you know, before they were legends of outlaw country, they were lost souls looking for their sound. Don't miss Mandy Moore and the new scripted Audible original, The Boar's Nest, Sue Brewer and the Birth of Outlaw Country Music. Discover the true untold story of the extraordinary woman behind the rise of outlaw country music and its biggest stars. Hear how one woman's vision in her tiny living room, far from Nashville's Music Row, became the epicenter of a musical movement. Mandy Moore as Sue Brewer in The Boar's Nest. Listen now at audible.com/The Boar's Nest.
Hey, it's Amy Brown here to talk about St. Jude Children's Research Hospital. For 60 years, St. Jude doctors and researchers have helped push the overall childhood cancer survivor rate from 20% to more than 80%. But we need your help getting that number to 100%. And most important, your support means that families will never receive a bill from St. Jude for treatment, travel, housing, or food. Now, that peace of mind means so much. So join me in helping St. Jude in the fight against childhood cancer. Become a partner in hope and text Bobby to 785-833. That's B-O-B-B-Y to 785-833.
Welcome to episode 296, Parker McCollum and Emma Klein. You're going to love them both. We spend about an hour with Parker, do about a half hour with Emma. Just two great interviews, two artists I'm huge fans of. Let's get going now with the top five releases that I'm most excited about this week. Kaylee Shore at number five, she put out a new project with 3 songs. It's called 3x3 Volume 1. The Chicks. It's all Chicks covers. Here's her version of Cowboy Take Me Away.
I said, Cowboy, take me away. Fly this girl as high as you can into the wild.
Kind of like that alternative Chicks vibe. At number four, Cody Johnson is covering a Willie Nelson song with Willie Nelson. It's Sad Songs and Waltzes.
Sad Songs and Waltzes aren't selling this year. It's a good thing that
I love that song. That's a classic Willie, man. At number three, Travis Denning released a new song called Call It Country. Here you go.
We keep that needle in the red on that hell-raising meter. Crank that Charlie Daniels out them Ford and Chevy speakers. Throw it down on this podunk town. Ain't afraid to get money. Yeah, call it what you want to. We just call it country.
He will be on this podcast next week. Just love that guy. At number two, Emma Klein, who you will hear later on. She has a new EP called Love Me Too. It's so good. She's so good. Here's a new song called Down.
Baby, I'm so afraid. If you keep me around till day breaks, will you still feel the way you do? I've been building up a fortress for so long now. How do I tear it all down, 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 down? Maybe it's the mood.
Check that out. I'm in tears. And then number one, and you wonder, how can you have a guest on and not have them number one? That's what everybody wonders right now. How do you have Emma Klein at number two when you have a guest? She's your guest. But number one is going to be Eddie and I put out, he's my special guest right now. Hi, Eddie.
Oh, hey, how's it going, guys?
We put out, Eddie's joining us virtually from right across the table from me.
Yeah. Can you hear me?
We put out a new EP called Award-Winning EP. We have 3 songs. We have Can't Say That in a Country Song, which has already been out with John Party. We have the Grandma song, which is recorded live when we do a live comedy show. And then a song called Fanny Pack. Do you have it from the beginning?
I have the chorus of it.
Okay.
What's the chorus?
What is it? We have 2 choruses.
Where we say fanny pack?
Right before the chorus.
Okay, this is our song. It's all about wearing a fanny pack. It's a Beastie Boys tribute song.
Yeah.
Here we go.
I'm walking down the street, all eyes on me. What's that around my waist in neon green? I'm zipped in the front and snapped in the back. Y'all already know that's my fanny pack.
Fanny pack.
If you need a ukulele or an almanac. If you need a fuel filter for your Pontiac, it's in my fanny pack.
I'm a modern day Mary Pack.
Fashions. Wherever I go, you know I'm rocking that.
F-A-N-N-Y, packed to the max right above my fly. To the max right above my fly.
Jam.
Yeah.
Number one.
You just talked over the zipping solo.
Did you get that, Mike?
Yeah.
Good point, Eddie. Yeah, bring on. I want you guys to know that's a zipper solo.
That's Bobby on the zipper.
Zip it. What was your inspiration on that?
I did one take. I walked in, just felt it.
You did?
Nice. Yeah. All right, there you go. We know we're dumb, guys.
But we love it.
We do. And we're doing a few shows this year. We're doing Bobby Fest in Kansas and New Braunfels, Texas. We won't do a lot of shows, but we hope you guys come out and watch. It is a fun, fun, fun show. But I would imagine if you don't know who we are and somebody brings you to a show and we're playing a bunch of rock, like hard, funny comedy stuff, you're like, what's happening?
Mm-hmm. I think when we play, like we played festivals a few years ago, and I think the very beginning, people are always like, what are we watching?
Because we're in like uniforms, and it's like the Wiggles, adult Wiggles.
Yes, but I think like five songs in or four songs in, they're like, okay, I kind of understand what these guys are doing. And then by the end, they're like, yeah, that was awesome.
And we have songs that people will sing back to, and I think if you've never heard it, you're like, how do you know this song? For example, like, I want Chick-fil-A,
yeah,
but it's Sunday. Like, that's an old classic of ours.
Sure,
and people are like, and some now people are going, I miss the old sound of the Raging Idiots.
But we must evolve. You know, we have to remember that.
Maddie and Tay have a new song called Mood Ring. It's the honorable mention here. Here's a clip of Mood Ring. Dustin Lynch and Chris Lane have a song called Tequila on a Boat. Album's out today. Oh, you can play a clip if you want. Tequila on a boat on a lake. Alan Jackson has a new album today called Where Have You Gone? J. Cole has The Offseason. Black Keys have Delta Cream. And St. Vincent have Daddy's Home. A couple music notes. Apple shares a trailer for the new docuseries 1971, The Year That Changed Everything. You'll get a closer look at the most iconic artists and songs, including from 1971, The Rolling Stones, Aretha Franklin, Bob Marley, Marvin Gaye, The Who, John Lennon, and Lou Reed. Garth Brooks is doing a big stadium show in Nebraska, in Lincoln. That'll be massive. It'll be the first music event at the stadium in 34 years. Luke Bryan's doing six shows in February of next year, residency shows in Vegas. I think Carrie's doing that in December of this year.
Yep.
Maren Morris and Miranda Lambert are the front runners for the CMT Awards. And there you go. Enjoy. This is going to be great. You're going to love both of these artists, Parker McCollum and Emma Klein. Support them if you can. Parker's killing it. Emma is on the verge of it. If you can support her by streaming her music if you like it, sharing her stuff. I mean, that's what it's all about to new artists. And away we go with Bobby Cast number 296. Here with Parker McCollum, which you're over at the house, and I walked in, and is that your truck?
Mm-hmm. Yes, sir.
Why is it? Well, because you don't live here.
I do now.
Breaking news.
Yeah, I just bought a house like 5 miles from here. I just moved in a week before. We're actually moving in right now. There's a lot of stuff we have.
Well, that's breaking news to me. I didn't know that. Have you said that yet?
CMT did a little kind of MTV Cribs kind of thing, off the road deal.
Did they show your house?
They showed the inside of it. But it was weird because that was like 2 days after we had closed. So there's literally nothing. There's not even a pot on the front porch.
But no outside of it.
No outside of it.
Man, got to be careful. Yeah. I used to put everything out all the time. I was like, you know what? If it's me, everybody can see.
Yeah.
Because I, about the third time I got robbed, I was like, you know what? This is not.
Do that. Hallie Ray, my girlfriend, walked outside. I bought a new leaf blower, like the big Ryobi leaf blower with the big 40-volt charging batteries. I got like 30 of them lined up in the garage. So I'm it like instantly went dad mode as soon as I bought the house.
That's cool. Congratulations.
Thank you, man.
Is that the first place that you've bought? Or did you have a...
Yeah, that's my first... That is my first owning of any kind of real estate.
That's great. Mm-hmm. Look at you. And you live pretty close to here.
Yeah, not far away. Just down... I guess I won't say now.
Yeah, good. Yeah, don't say...
Just down that way.
Just down that way.
Yeah.
Well, you come over and hit the golf simulator sometime when it's raining or nighttime. That's what we do.
I need it bad. I just saw a meme that was like... It was a picture of a clown laying in bed, and it said, this is me after hitting a smooth 109 with my $1,300 custom-fitted clubs.
Yeah, things seem to be going pretty good for you.
They're going good.
I was talking to somebody about you... Because we have the same, we're under the same management umbrella. We don't have the exact same managers, but we both are in the same company. And so my guy, I don't know if you know who Tom Lord is, but he's like over Red Light, the creative, right? Mm-hmm. The promotion. And so I was talking to him. I was like, man, you know who really got
lucky is Dirks. And he said, why? I said, because he's got Parker on as his baby act, and yes. Parker would be a big middle act for someone now because he's blown up so much. I'm assuming that that was what was happening before COVID, yes. and you guys are just honoring the
yeah.
contract.
Yeah, he just, I didn't want to, I've always kind of, I think Enzo and I talk about it all the time, just doing good business, and it's all about playing the long game, so don't get caught up, you know, or too caught up in, you know, that instant gratification. So
well, that is good on you. And for yeah. people that don't know, like Parker has decided to be a good guy and stay committed to a deal that he made and make significantly less money.
Yeah.
And that says a lot about you as a person. And I'll say that you're not going to, you're not going to say that in an interview, but I will no. because
I appreciate it.
You know, as someone who tours and makes a living on the road too, yeah. you know, when you finally start to get those bigger guarantees, your life changes.
Yeah. You don't want to buy a house and then be first of three. You know, that's not ideal.
That is true. But that's a big shout out to you because that's thanks, you man. And Riley and Dirks. I remember once when it was, and all of these artists have had their own time where they've been huge, but it was Lady A and Hunter Hayes was the middle act, and they had a new baby act uh-huh. Named Sam Hunt, who blew up.
Yeah.
And Sam was playing 15 minutes, and mm-hmm. half the crowd was coming to see Sam.
Mm-hmm.
And that's the comparison that I made to with you. I was like, oh, half the crowd is going to show up to see Parker. And yeah. But knowing you, you'll be back around quick.
If I didn't love Riley and love Dirks, I could see myself probably feeling different about it. But, man, they're just as cool as they come, dude.
Well, A-plus guy. I just wanted to highlight that. That's an A-plus guy and an A-plus business decision by you guys. You thank too, you. Enzo.
Yeah.
Because I know that had to be tough. What prompted the move to Nashville?
Man, it was kind of a couple things. It was, you know, I hadn't been home more than 2 or 3 days at a time in like 4 or 5 years. And so when COVID happened, I was kind of like, there were some silver lines. I enjoyed it. But by the time Christmas kind of rolled around, and I'd been looking at houses up here all during COVID, I was like, man, real estate's going to bomb. I go in there and get in a good time. It didn't happen. Everything went up. It's as high as it's ever been. But I just kind of, I moved to Austin 10 days after I graduated high school to try to play country music for a living. And I kind of felt back home in Texas that I'd climbed the totem pole a little bit. And I wanted to feel like up here, I'm at the bottom. And I need that.
Ish, not the bottom.
The bottom compared to where I would like to be.
Got it.
And I just needed that. I was like, man, I don't want to, I'm so far from where I'd like to go. I'm so far from making it in my mind. And so being here kind of, you know, humbles you a little bit and kind of keeps you're like, man, I got a long way to go.
And it makes you better.
Yeah, for sure.
Now you're around people, and listen, I can say this as someone who lived in Austin for 15 years. Like, I love that, feels like home to me still.
Yeah, it is home.
Like, wow. When people are like, hey, where are you from? Like, I grew up in Arkansas, but Austin was as much from 22 to, you know, 35. Yeah. Like, that city was and still is me, but I had to level up a bit too. And it was, do I want to be on in Austin and 10 other cities, or I want to come and make a national show and see if I can run with the big boys?
Yeah.
And that's, you know, basically what you had to do too.
I kind of got burnt out too. I was like, man, I feel like I did what I came here to do. In 2011, I graduated high school and moved there. You know, when I was sitting at home during COVID and finally was forced to slow down and think about everything and had never done that. And I was like, man, let's just get out of here for a little while. I know I'm going to grow old here. So, you know, before I start doing that one day, at least go live somewhere else for a little while.
Congratulations, man. That's pretty cool. You bought a house. And your girlfriend's with you?
She is there.
How was that decision for her?
It was kind of funny. Since we started dating, she was always, you know, she was like, just, you know, we're not going to live together until we're married. And I was like, that's cool. You know, I was like, I'll squeeze every last day of that. I love living by myself. I think it's great. And I was laying on the bus the other night right before we, like, were moving in. And I was like, it's like my last night alone. And I'm on a bus with 5 guys. But she had always said, she's like, we won't live together until we're married. And then as soon as I bought the house, she was like, well, I'm going to be here all the time. And she started nursing school. She started today, actually.
Here
in Nashville.
Love it.
So she was like, well, I guess, you know, I'm going to be there anyway, so I might as well move in. I was like, yes, absolutely. Why would you go?
Did a part of you go, I don't know. Or were you told? I'm telling you, with my fiance now, there was not a part of me that even hiccuped. It was the first time ever that it was like, hey, because she came and stayed with me during COVID when all lockdown happened at the first of it. And it was like, hey, do we move? And it was just like, yep. Yeah. It was just like naturally, yep, of course.
Well, you probably feel the same way about Caitlin. Like, Hallie Rae is the sweetest, easiest, most wonderful human. Everybody likes her way more than they like me once they meet her.
I feel you there.
And I knew from the first time I ever met her, I was like, She's an easy, extremely easy person, man. Living with her was never even I had no doubts.
Talk to me about the beginning of music for you. When did you start playing? I won't say bars, but maybe that's where you started. How old were you? Were you a teenager trying to play places? And what were those places?
Yeah, and I grew up in a town just north of Houston called Conroe. I went to high school in a town called The Woodlands, which is like 5 miles from it.
We had a bunch of shows at The Woodlands. Yeah. Theater there.
Yeah, we're headlining it. I graduated high school on that stage, and we're headlining it in October. I'm like,
that's pretty cool. Yeah.
But there wasn't much of a music scene down there, especially for, there wasn't any country. Every kid in my high school wanted to be a rapper. Like, I was listening to Old Crow and Robert Earl Keen and Randy Rogers Band, and nobody I grew up with listened to that stuff. My older brother and stuff, but... So that's what kind of made me go to Austin. I wanted to go find a bunch of people who were kind of like-minded into the same stuff. But I think I had my first paying gig. I played on a flatbed trailer in Giddings, Texas, the Hayseed Festival, maybe.
How old?
I was 16. My mom let me drive myself. And then she showed up to make sure I got there safely.
That's pretty cool.
I guess now it's cool, but at the time I was like, what are you doing here?
That's true. It's cool that here's what was cool. She let you drive by yourself.
Mm-hmm.
And then trailed you. She didn't go, I'll drive you.
Yes. Yeah. I mean, it was, looking back, it's super cool that she was there. Because that guy ended up paying me like 9 months later, I think, like $75.
He waited that long. He probably was trying to get away with not paying
me. He sent me a check. Yeah.
So you play this at 16. Were you going, this would be fun because I like to play a little guitar? Or were you going, heck, I'm 16. I think I'm going to do this for my career?
I knew when I was like a junior in high school is when I really started. My brother and sister were older. They were both in college at the time, so I was like the baby. I was the last one. The reins were kind of looser on me. My mom was not near as strict on me my last years of high school as she was my siblings. So I was sneaking out of my bedroom window on the roof, you know, every night, coming back in and wigging out, trying to write songs. And that's really when – and I was like, all right, I'm not, like, I don't stand out at sports. I was okay. Wasn't anything special. But I could play guitar and write songs and sing way better than any of my friends. And that's when I was kind of like – all right, this is it for me.
Were you the music kid? Maybe not the band kid, but were you the kid who played music in high school? They know you as that?
Oh, yeah.
If there was a party, would you ever have your guitar to play?
Every now and then they'd get me to do it. But, I mean, again, I was playing, like, you know, Randy Rogers songs and Pat Green songs and stuff. Like, they weren't. Those kids were like, who? So.
And did you decide you were going to wait till you graduated high school to move off?
Well, I had to. You know, it's not that I didn't get into college. I didn't exactly apply. I filled out my name for a couple of schools on the form, and then once they sent back insufficient application letters, I was like, Mom, I'm just going to go to Austin Community College. And just like move to Austin, and I knew I wasn't going there to go to school. So I enrolled. I was enrolled for a year.
Did you go to class at all?
A couple times.
Nice.
I actually ended up not going to class, but my business professor I had met on like the first day, we ended up becoming good buddies, and we would hang out outside of class all the time, but I never went to his class. He's a super cool guy. But I was just, it was really just a means to get to Austin. And man, I met Corby Schaub at the Saxon Pub on South Lamar, who had just quit Ryan Bingham and the Dead Horses, who were my favorite band in the world at the time. I thought they walked on water.
When you say met him, though, were you both hanging out? Were you trying to play? Were you asking if you could play?
I was not playing there yet. In fact, it might have been the exact next day that David Cotton, who used to book those clubs down there, called me and was like, can you play tomorrow night, the Saxon? And I was like, dude, I only got like 5 songs. And he's like, well, play them all 3 times. And
how did he know you played?
A girl named Ashley Monica was there that night she thought I was good and was trying to get me to meet some people. And she was like, you need to hear this kid. And he didn't even listen. He was just like, all right, cool. You can play here tomorrow night.
So you met the guy before you even played there.
Mm-hmm.
And what did that relationship turn into?
He ended up producing the Limestone Kid, my first record. Because he was in original Dead Horses with Ryan Bingham, like through Mescalito and Roadhouse Son, two of my favorite records of all time. And so when I was in the bar that night, and I was only 20 at the time, I was in there with a fake ID. They ended up finding out. I'd played there a couple times, and then they made me stop playing there until I was 21, and I was allowed to come back. But I met him, and I remember that night, I was like, dude, you play guitar for Ryan Bingham. And he was like, no, I did play guitar. He's like, I just quit the band, like the week before. And I was just crushed. And then like 2 weeks later, that same girl was like, hey, come over to my house. Corby's over here doing some demos for me. And I had just written two of those songs on that first record like the day before and played them for him. And he was like, man, let me produce your record. So I don't think he had ever produced a record before.
So what does that mean to you, let me produce your record? How many songs did you have? Or did you go, I'm not there yet. Let me write some more. What was that?
I actually, the songs I had, there was the money problem that, and I had my, and my dad's very successful guy. He had offered to do it, pay for all of that. And I just respectfully declined because I wanted to do it on my own. So I actually went and took out a loan. And that was quite a process to not have, I had no credit or anything, had my granddad co-sign on it. Once I got the money, it was like, okay. And then I didn't take out enough. He was like, all right, well, we have enough for four songs. So we did a four-song EP, which was called A Red Town View. And he's like, when you get some more money, we'll go in and do the full album. And so I went and took out another loan, and those four songs kind of compiled with the other six to make, or seven, to make an 11-song album.
Were you playing a bunch as you're making this record? Because it sounds like when you met him, you were not playing that often.
A little bit. I was living with my brother, my older cousin, in this house in South Austin, Manchac and Slaughter, if you know.
Oh, I used to live right there. I used to live Brody and Slaughter.
Yeah.
So you're talking about one road difference.
Yes. And I was living there. I was enrolled in school. And man, I was unmotivated. I didn't know what I was doing. I had no idea how to go get a gig that someone hadn't just handed me. And so my brother actually one day was like, I think he's 6 years older than I am. So I think he kind of saw me just sort of not doing anything, but I think he thought I was talented. And my brother's a phenomenal songwriter, so he's a very good judge of that. And I remember him saying to me one night, he's like, dude, just go book 30 shows in 30 days and see if you can ever quit. He's like, play those and see if you ever stop. I didn't get 30 in 30 days, but I ended up playing like 12 shows that month, and I've been playing ever since.
So as you're performing and you have this record, are you selling it at the table? What are you doing with that record?
I had paid a guy to print, I want to say like 250 copies, maybe 300 copies. And I just always kept them with me, and I would just hand them out everywhere I went. Like, do you know Steamboat Music Festival?
I do.
I used to go up there and as a fan. And my buddy's parents would actually take him and I. They're big music fans, and they paid for me to go one year. And I walked around the lobby handing out that EP.
So you're just handing them out. You weren't selling them. No. You were like, anybody listen to this.
Yeah, just take a listen. And then right before COVID, we headlined the whole festival, closed it out. So it's kind of a cool little story. But it was I'm the luckiest human in my mind to ever live. Like, I mean, it exactly how I thought and dreamed about it happening when I was 17, is besides COVID, clearly, which is probably for everybody, exactly how I dreamed about it and thought it and hoped it would happen and wanted it to happen when I was 17 is exactly how it's gone.
So who saw you and said, dang, I would like to invest my brain power, my money, my time into making this person a better artist? Like, who was the first person to take a chance on you?
Corby Schaub was really the first person to take a chance on me, but, I mean, I went and took out the money. He just thought I was good, wanted to produce my record, thought it was worth his time. The first person to really go, you got it, I can help you, was Randy Rogers from the Randy Rogers Band.
And where did you meet Randy?
I was first of four, opening for him and two other bands in Corpus Christi one day. We had a van. We didn't have a trailer then. We took out the back seat, and all the gear was in the back of the van. And I listened. I'd been obsessed with them my whole life. You know, he was like royalty down there to me. And we were opening for him. We had just pulled up. I remember we pulled up in the van, and I look at my tour manager at the time, Jake Murphy, and I was like, all right, well, let's get out and go talk. We'd been playing quite a few shows at that point. Just nothing. I mean, no-go shows. Terrible stuff. And but we were touring a lot. And I remember looking at him, and I was like, let's go talk to a bunch of people who don't want to talk to us. Well, we open the van. Randy Rogers comes walking up. He's got on Gucci shades, 5950 hat, van shoes, jorts, gold chain, Rolly on his wrist. Like, not what you think Randy Rogers is going to walk up. I mean, he looks so G. I remember he walked up, and he was like, if you guys need anything, let me know. I was like, all right, that's cool. He's a headliner to come and, you know, at least holler at us. And then he said, actually, we went and played our show at like 3:30 in the afternoon. I looked over on the side of the stage, and he watched our whole set. And then 5 hours later, he plays his show at 10 o'clock at night, and I was standing side stage for his show, and he walked off, and I'd never been on a tour bus, and he's like, let's go to the bus. Right as he walked off stage. And we went to the bus and went to the back lounge, and he just lounged, and he sat down, and he was like, look, I've been doing some research on you. I'd only had that one record, The Limestone Kid, out. And he's like, this record is phenomenal. He's like, you can be a star. That night, he was like, you have star power. You could be a star. I just want to help you avoid some of the mistakes I made. I would love to help you get there. I don't want anything from you. I just want to help. So go home and think about it. That's something you want to do. And I actually ended up was trying to call my mom, trying to call my dad, trying to call my brother. Everybody was asleep. And I was freaking out. And I was like, Randy Rogers. Once he had just started a management company. And he didn't really have any. But I think he was doing some stuff with Bruce Robinson at the time and maybe someone else. But they needed like a kind of a main focus and right place, right time kind of thing, I guess. But he took time out of his life to come to Nashville and go into Universal Records and Big Machine. And
so he came and did the pitches with you.
Yeah, he had a condo up here still, and he let me come up here and stay in his condo for free and write and got me a publishing deal. Walked into every major label in town and said, if you pass on this kid, you're passing on the next George Strait, which, overhyping it, I would say quite a bit. He's setting me up to fail, but he's a family man. He has a wife and kids, and he's got a whole life outside of touring, and he plays 150 shows a year. And he would take time to fly up here on a weekly basis with me and write and get me in rooms and go in there and say crazy, outlandish things like that to major labels. And got me a record deal, publishing deal. I call him dad for a reason. People always ask why I call him dad. So
when you started to do the tour of A.M. Parker, I know you have a record, your big fancy record label. Mm-hmm. How did that go for you? Was the first one easy or was it weird? How many did you go through until you settled on where you are now?
We met with all the majors, and then I think we met with Big Loud as well. And kind of before that, a lot of smaller labels had been kind of coming to Austin and whining and dining and doing that kind of thing where they take you out and they do the whole thing, which was really cool in its own right. I had never had any record label, you know, kind of holler at any capacity. And so once the majors really came out, and we're like, and once one of them does, it's kind of like they all come calling. It's kind of like a bidding war. Even if they like you or not, I think they just don't want to miss out more, and they don't want to be told no, which I completely understand that. But I remember sitting there, Enzo remembers it too. I mean, I just, you know, you have every major label in country music sitting there going, you know, what? And we already had a huge touring base and generated quite a bit of revenue touring, so I kind of had all the leverage was on our side. We're in the driver's seat. And they offered a bunch of money up front and all this stuff. And I said, look, I don't want your money. I said, I want creative control. I was like, I just want to be able, my whole dream was to be on a major label with creative control and be able to do what I want to do. If it doesn't work, cool. That's it. You know, I don't think you'll ever lose money. We already make you enough money as we tour. But I mean, I bet on me because I'll bet on myself for sure. And, you know, it probably, I don't know how it came off at the time, but I guess it worked because they all made great offers, and I was able to counter and get the deal that I wanted. So
you get to decide.
Yeah.
This is the year to stop overpaying for your family plan. So choose a Straight Talk Wireless family plan. Unlimited data, talk, and text on a reliable 5G network. And you can get a new line starting at $25 per line per month for 4 lines, plus taxes and fees and no contracts. That's good decision making. Available at Walmart and on straighttalk.com. Family plan discount with 4 lines, all on the Silver Unlimited plan. Not combinable with auto pay discount. In times of traffic, your data may be temporarily slower than other traffic. Video streams at up to 480p. This festival and concert season will be all about the boots, and Tecovas is your next stop before attending your next concert. Tecovas has seasonal and limited edition offerings this spring. You're talking about men's boots, women's boots, apparel, hats, bags, and more. All Tecovas boots are made by hand in a time-honored tradition, timeless style, always on trend. And Tecovas has first wear comfort, little to no break-in period. Like, it's hard to find this level of comfort paired with this level of style. Plus, direct consumer pricing keeps the value on your feet, the money in your pocket. So stop by your local Tecovas store. Have a complimentary drink. Shop the new styles. You like the smell of leather or no?
I love it.
Yeah. That's what the whole store basically is. Fresh leather.
Yep.
Friendly staff. Or like the smell of staff?
I don't know. I guess I'm sure they smell good there.
Many stores have leather custom branding to make your boots truly personalized. What a gift, too. Regular live music and events. There is no in-store experience like this. If you can't make it to a store, just visit Tecovas.com. Tecovas.com.
Tecovas.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Tecovas.com. Find your new favorite pair of boots today. Willie Nelson, Waylon Jennings, Kris Kristofferson. How do the biggest names in outlaw country start a musical revolution? Through one woman's vision from one tiny living room. Don't miss Mandy Moore as Sue Brewer in the new scripted Audible original, The Boar's Nest, Sue Brewer and the Birth of Outlaw Country Music. Discover the true untold story of the extraordinary woman behind the outlaw country music movement and its biggest stars. Brewer shaped the sound and soul of country music as we know it today, despite never picking up an instrument herself. Lovingly dubbed as the Boar's Nest, Sue's place was an intimate staging ground where a new breed of singer-songwriters, wounded souls, wayward upstarts, that's where they would spur each other and tap into something bigger and something realer. Starring Mandy Moore and featuring Eben Moss Bachrach as Shel Silverstein and TJ Osborne as Johnny Cash alongside a full ensemble cast. Audible invites you to enter the Boar's Nest and experience the rise of a musical revolution. One woman, one time, one place. The Boar's Nest, Sue Brewer, and the birth of outlaw country music. Listen now at audible.com/theboar's nest.
So at what point do you start preparing your major, we'll call it major label debut? Like, do you start immediately? Did you already have the song that you led with? Like,
I did not. I had, well, I guess Randy Montana was like my first co-write in town, first real co-write. And I'd wanted to go in. I'd never really co-written before, besides with my older brother. And so I wanted to come in and have like a good idea. So I'd found this video of me like singing this song. It was, "What does that say about me? I could love somebody like you," was the original line. And it was the melody that Pretty Heart is. And I was like, man, how did I forget about that? I'm going to take that in tomorrow. And so we ended up writing that song. And I think I signed my deal not just a few months after that. I think that's the right timeline. And so when I signed the deal and I was like, these are the songs I have. And they were like, that's the one.
Oh, so it was immediate. They knew, you knew, yeah. All good.
But it didn't, we were cut it and then it didn't, hell, I don't know if it came, it probably didn't come out for close to a year. Yeah, we were just kind of sitting.
Did that process feel like it was taking forever?
Yeah, I was really, which I mean, I told myself in the beginning, I was like, don't go in here and it's really easy to, you know, anything that's worth working really hard for, I mean, you know, probably just as well as anybody, like as soon as it starts, something's going to go wrong, something's not going to be what someone promised, whatever. So I just kind of kept that in mind and I was like, man, just, you signed the deal. I was like, just trust the process. I was like, these people have done it. You know, you're the 1,000,000th artist that they've promoted and put on the big stage. And I was like, and he talked me through a lot of that. You know, he's been through it 100 times.
So. What'd you do during that whole time though, while you're waiting? Were you just writing?
Writing. And I was coming up here and writing. I'd had my publishing deal for a year at that point. So I was writing a lot. But I was touring. We were still playing 150 shows a year. So I was as busy as I could be. I mean, when I say I wasn't home more than 2 days at a time for 4 years, that is no exaggeration. I would literally get off the bus in Austin on Sunday, take the last Southwest flight out on Sunday evening to Nashville, write and go to meetings Monday, Tuesday, Wednesday, and fly right back Wednesday night. And
do it again.
Go on the road, yeah, for like 3 years.
When you stopped playing shows this last year, did you miss it immediately, or were you like, dang, I can kind of exhale for a second before I get back at it?
This is a true story too. Like 2 weeks before we played our last show, before I'd even heard of COVID or Corona or whatever, we called it Corona at that time. I remember saying to the guys, I was like, man, I wish we could just have like 30, because we were beat at that time. We'd just done those shows with Miranda. Life was crazy, super fast. And I was like, I wish we could have 30 days off and then just be, and so when it started, and I remember I called Enzo that day and he's like, just go home, be like a week or two, we'll be right back to it, we'll figure all this out. And I'm like, 2 weeks off, beautiful, I'm about to go home and do absolutely nothing. And then it was 365 days later exactly that we played our next regular show.
So you're the reason COVID happened.
Yeah, 100%.
We were wishing for it.
Yeah, y'all can put all that on me.
Yeah.
That's great.
We finally know.
It was him.
Yeah, I've seen a bunch of clips of your shows, people posting them. I'm also a stalker. But what is a Parker McCollum show? What's the deal? Why do people love it so much? What do you do that people are just like, this is the greatest live show?
Man, I don't know. I tell people all the time when I meet them, I'm like, I wish I was cooler. I'm sorry, I'm so underwhelming. Man, I don't know. Yeah, I think, I always say, it doesn't matter what genre or who the person is, male, female, whatever. Country doesn't matter. When someone opens their mouth to sing a song, instantly, you either buy it or you don't, right? You would agree with that?
Yes.
Like instantly, you're like,
as a performer, music or anything else. Yeah.
You either buy immediately. Right, I'm either like, okay, yes, you have my attention, or
sure.
Eh. And so I think for the people that follow me and have followed me for a long time, or new fans or old fans, whatever, I think they believe it, and I think they buy it when I sing those songs that I write. And I think it's as simple as that. And so when they come to the show, man, the energy is, it blows my mind. Sometimes I'm in the middle of a song and I forget words because I'm thinking to myself, what in the world, why do they like us so much, you know? So
you're also a much better singer than I think I expected you to be. I think I've told you this before too, and this isn't an insult in any way, but you can play, you're a good looking dude. Like, you should be a packet. You almost should be what the record label went and found and made it and just said, hey, we'll don't worry about that. We'll mix him in the studio and he'll sound good because he's got everything else. Like, but you're also like a way better singer than you should be. Meaning if you were ugly, you'd still be good.
I appreciate that.
That's the best compliment you could possibly get from me. If you were an ugly man, you would still be a good artist.
Well, thank you.
Yes.
I would like to, if you could just come to my house now that we're kind of sort of neighbors and just tell me that every day to start the day, I'd probably be good.
What happened
thank
recently?
You.
I was watching a clip. I think a guy threw a drink on a girl in the crowd. Did you see that or did someone
tell
you?
Yeah, no, it was like, I mean, the crowd's 3 feet from the front of the stage. And it was, we had gone off stage and we came on to do our encore. And they were losing it, wanted us to do this encore, and we have it planned out for the show in case they ever want one. So we go out and we get about, I've never stopped the show all the time that I've been doing. I've never stopped the show in the middle of a song, ever. Usually I just keep singing and watch them just beat the hell out of each other. And or I'll get done and say, you guys can fight all you want, but if you lose, you have to leave. But usually it's a guy fighting a guy or a girl fighting a girl, which is a little more tolerable. And so it was like second row. We were right at the start of the encore. And I just so happened to look, and I see this guy just shove this girl. I mean, this dude's with a cowboy hat on. He's probably 6'6". I'm sure he's probably only about 6'3", 6'4". But cowboy hat, it looked very big. And the girl was little bitty. And he just shoves her like that, like 3 or 4 feet. And she looks at me when he shoves her. And he's got a tall boy Miller Lite that he just cracked open, fresh beer, and just dumps it on her head. And she just freezes. And we're playing the whole time. The whole song's going. I'm singing the whole time. And I'm just watching this like, no way. And so it had been a guy on a guy or a girl on a girl, whatever. That's a little more tolerable. But to do that to a lady, you know, how I was raised, where I grew up, that's just absolute, you know. You get, I don't know what you can say on the play. You get your ass beat for that.
Right.
Which I was kind of surprised that the dudes didn't just start laying into him for doing it. And the security was on it like that. But I just had to, I stopped the show, the song. I was like, dude, the guy's got to get out of here. Like, it's absolutely unacceptable. So, but the girl, she was like, the fact that I did that, she was soaked in beer. And
yeah, that sucks.
Had the time of her life.
Do you get any crap from any of your music friends in Texas for moving to Nashville?
Nah. Everybody loves it, dude.
Is that because I feel like that stage is kind of over as well.
Yeah. I mean, dude, I made it very clear from the start. And I was like, I grew up idolizing George Strait. You know, he has 60 number ones. Probably, I think, 2 or 3 more than that, maybe 62, 63, something like that now. He's the epitome of what I think anybody should aspire to be in country music. And he sold out AT&T Stadium back-to-back nights, residency in Vegas, Madison Square Garden, you name it. There's nothing he hasn't done in the business. He's a king. And so that was always, I was like, man, I'll never get to that level. But try to, you know, and maybe you get halfway there. That's pretty damn good. And so I always made it really clear that was my goal. But it was always my goal to do it on really, I was raised on songwriters, really, really talented, you know, honest songwriting. And so the goal was always to go to that level and be on country radio without sounding like, you know, everything else that is coming out on country radio. And there's a dude, I say that all the time. People are like, whoa, be careful. I'm like, a majority of that stuff I really enjoy. I really like it. It doesn't matter what genre it is or songs I don't like. But I like the majority of stuff on country radio. I just think that there's a gap in a space for someone that's younger. Like Chris Stapleton's phenomenal. He's an anomaly, right? Like, as talented as a human being can be. But he's a little older. There's no, like, young kids, younger generation that are super like hung up on songwriting that are on commercial radio, country radio. And I just was like, maybe I could do that. So I'm really super competitive, and it's more of less like a mental challenge for me. I was like, maybe I can do that. Maybe I can pull it off.
Did your brother help teach you how to write songs? Like, where how, you say you started writing them early. Where, how did you start to learn?
Man, he, you know what? Actually, no, he would never teach me anything. He would always tell me to learn on my own. But I just, you know, he introduced me to songwriters at a really young age. Like when I was 12, he gave me like a Traveling Wilburys album for Christmas. Gave me a Towns record for Christmas one year when I was really young. A Rodney Crow record. You know, James McMurtry, Robert O'Keefe, just goes on and on and on. Chris Knight and Slade Cleaves and Steve Earle. And he just, this is all we listened to. We didn't listen to anything else. And I just connected with it at a really, really young age. And I really understood, I just really related to where those guys wrote those songs from, I think. And I feel like I write my songs from the same place. And so it was the only thing in my life that I've ever done that I really was like, I didn't feel bad or like I was being cocky when I was like, I can do this. You know, like sometimes people oversell themselves a little bit, probably more often than not. And I never felt like I was doing that with songwriting. I was like, I can do this. And it felt like, I don't know, you know, like you don't pick the game picks you, you don't choose the, whatever it is, the game chooses you. That's kind of what it was for songwriting. It was like, I couldn't, you know, but at the same time, had my brother been ice skating, I would be ice skating.
So like, is your brother in music now?
Mm-hmm.
What is he doing? Where is he?
He's doing his solo thing in Texas right now.
What's his name?
Cutting a record right now, Tyler McCollum.
And is there any, listen, I know there's love. Is he like, dang, dude, you're killing it? And
no, man, I think he's so stoked for me.
Really?
Yeah. I think, because he knew when he would come home from college, I knew he was coming home and I was in like junior high or high school, I would always try to have like a new song I'd written to show him. And nothing was ever good. And he was always just like, that sucks. All the time. He had no shame. And I'd written a song, Permanent Headphones, and I was like a freshman in high school and came home and I played it for him. And he was like, you wrote that on your own. He's like, you're going to do this for a long time. I can remember him telling me that when I was really young. And so I think now, because he's kind of the one that's like, told y'all, you know, I told y'all he would do it. So
the value of having someone like your brother, because I have a couple of those in my life too, where it's hard to trust, especially when you start to get just an inch of success, because you have a lot of yes people around you or a lot of people that are just like, oh, you're so good, you're so good. But you can really trust the people that can tell you when you're not good.
Mm-hmm.
Because, yeah, you know that your brother, for example, when he does tell you something's good, you believe it because of all the times he told you, you know, this just isn't quite good enough.
I mean, he is a phenomenal songwriter. I try to get, I'm all the time, I'm like, dude, move to Nashville. Let me get you a publishing deal. I'm like, you'd be make millions writing songs, dude. But he's like as authentic and as honest in those writing those songs. And I think, I mean, he wants to sell a lot of tickets and he wants to be very successful doing it. But I don't think he necessarily was as hungry to be like, you know, on that level as I was. Like from the time I was 16 years old, I was like, it's either A1, like top level, or fail. I don't think it's necessarily that way for him.
I'm going to play a little bit of To Be Loved By You.
Sure.
Here is the current single.
So why are you always angry? Why are you always quiet? Why do you sleep alone when I know you don't like it? Maybe you might be different, but can you tell me the truth?
So you wrote that with Rhett Akins.
I did.
That's pretty cool.
Thank you, man.
I mean, I love Rhett.
Oh, dude, he's a G.
As a kid, you're, you know, obviously younger than I am, but as a kid, Rhett was on the radio all the time when I was a kid. Mm-hmm. Like, was a fan of him as an artist, and now, you know, getting to know him personally, and I just, Rhett, I think he was playing, we were playing the Opry together, and I was doing comedy after he was playing, but right before he went out there, he pulled the biggest dip out of his mouth. Right before he walked in, he went, pulled out, threw it in the cup, and walked right on stage. I was like, that's disgusting and awesome, and that's the most Rhett Akins thing I've ever seen in my life.
Redman Silver Label.
Yeah.
Every time we write together, I hope he doesn't mind me saying this. Sorry, Rhett, if you do. He will chew an entire, I've seen him go through more than one, an entire bag of Redman Silver Label. And we're there for 3 hours. You've seen how big a bag. It's not a can of dip. It's a bag of chew.
It's disgusting.
Yeah.
And I was like, that's disgusting, but I'm glad I got to see it. Like, I would expect nothing less from Rhett. When you write this song with him, who, by the way, as an artist, fantastic, but as a songwriter, even better, like Rhett throughout his career.
Yeah. He gets both sides of it. Yeah.
Whenever you write this song, was this one of those where you're like, yeah, this is special? Or what, did it become special after, you know, you cut it? Or like, what process was this song special?
Man, none of them are really special to me when I write them. And I think it's because I get so, like, when I come up with this melody that I'm obsessed with or this idea or whatever, I get so excited then, and then I write it, and I'm like, oh, it's super cool. And then I just forget about it. Like, I don't even think twice about it. But this, I had actually written the first verse and a chorus on the back of the bus. At like 11 o'clock in the morning, we were going on the road. We'd just gotten on the bus. Excuse me. And we just got on the bus. I was in the back lounge, and I wrote it down. I'd actually said out loud, me and Hallie Ray were arguing at the time, having a little whatever, and I said out loud, I was like, man, what does a man have to do to be loved by that girl? And he kind of perked up. He's like, yeah, you might want to write that down. And so in 15 minutes, I went back and wrote the first verse and the chorus, and then same thing. I just forgot about it. Didn't even think about it. And then I had a write with Rhett. And when Rhett and I write, it's not like any other co-write. Like, we'll go sit for the first hour, you know, he's having a chew. I'll probably bum some off him a lot of the time. And we just talk about, like, turkey hunting or deer hunting for an hour. Or, like, he's showing me pictures of all the deer he shot or out at one of his farms here in Nashville. And then he'll be like, hey, so do you have anything? And that day, it was, like, a few days after I'd written that. Or maybe a couple weeks. And I was like, dude, I have this. And he was just like, all right, we'll finish it. And I was like, okay, whatever. And he was on his phone, and I kept being like, what do you think about this? And he'd be like, yeah, how about this? And I'd be like, all right, what about this? And he'd be like, yeah, how about this? For the second verse. And it was really slow. It was not like this big rock and roll kind of Rolling Stones feel thing that it is now. And we did a little work tape and I left. And then we went going into the studio like 3 months later. And I was like, man, I remember talking to my producer, John Randall. I was like, this song could be this. And most of the time I'm wrong in the studio. I've learned that. I learned that very early on. Most of the time I'm wrong. But every now and then I'm like, dude, just give this a shot. And we recorded it, and then Rhett called me like probably 2 months after that. Someone had sent him a rough mix, and he was like, did we write that together? And I was like, yeah, remember we finished it that day at your management, or his, I think it's his publishing office that he has. And he was like, dude, that's insane. And I was like, dude, the song's, I was like, and I'm never hyped on my own stuff. I never think very much of it. I get over it very quickly. I'm on to the next thing very quickly. And that was probably one of two ever that I've been like, yeah, this is dope for sure. And probably more so because he thought so.
Your EP, six songs, it's out now. Six songs, right?
Hollywood Gold, yeah.
And five of them you wrote. One of them is a Stapleton cut. Yeah. How'd you get that song?
Man, that was my first outside cut on Universal. That's the only song I've ever cut that I didn't write on Universal. And I was driving to the ranch one day. I was in my truck. And I got a text message from Brian Wright at the label, and it was just a audio clip on a text. And it just said Stapleton/Anderson. And I'm like, he's on Universal as well, Stapleton. So I was like, oh, maybe this is one of the perks of like being on the same label. You get to listen to his record before it comes out. Well, I listened to the song and I called Brian. I'm like, yo, that's insane. Like, what an incredible song. And he's like, yeah, Stapleton never cut it. I was like, what do you mean? He's like, yeah, he wrote it in like 2006 or something, or whenever he wrote it, a long time ago. And I was like, he's like, do you think you would want to cut it? And I was like, dude, I sent it to my dad, and he was like, that's the best song you've ever written. And I was like, nah, I didn't write that. I was like, but I am going to sing it. I was like, instantly, I just connected. They send me outside songs all the time. That's the only one I've ever been like, I'm cutting that song.
Because I know you write all your stuff. When I saw, I guess when the record came out, I was like, dang, he must have really loved that song if he's going to cut something he didn't write.
Yeah, it was just, I mean, dude, and it's been like in our show, whenever that, like all the lights go down and Charlie, my keys player, starts playing that piano part, the intro, and they just lose it, dude. I mean, they lose it. And that's the first song, I had never gone no guitar on stage, like wireless mic. And so looking back now, when I was first doing it like a year ago, is unbelievably awful, me without a guitar in my hands. But now I've kind of really come into it, and I think I'm a little better at it, hopefully. But it's so cool. I mean, go out there, and I'm literally in the crowd singing that song. It's really cool.
You're not going to be able to do that for much longer.
Man, I...
You're just not... I mean, that as you grow and you become a bigger star, people want to touch... It just becomes a safety thing.
Yeah.
Urban can still do it, but he has security go out with him and surround him where you're really close. But you're going to have the same thing where people are going to be grabbing you, and you're not going to be able to sing because they're literally physically pulling on you.
That sounds like a good problem
It's the best problem to have. Yeah, I mean, in the best way. Like, you're not going to be able to do that much longer. You could do like Dustin Lynch, who gets in a boat and they carry him across. But, you know, it's a great problem to not be able to go out without people attacking you in a loving way. Also, don't stage dive frontward. I did that once on your stomach.
Yeah.
To where I didn't realize.
Did they catch you?
Well, they punched me in the balls about 10 times.
Yeah.
I didn't think about it. Well, I don't know. It didn't matter if they squeezed or not.
Yeah.
Their hands, they were trying to. I don't think anyone would do that to me on purpose. For you, I get it, right?
They do, for sure.
For me, I think they were probably trying to avoid it and still couldn't help it.
I'm not, man, I steal from George Strait and his stage presence all the time, and the fact that he's never, it's like, you can't find one video of him taking one step on stage. Like, he's stationary the whole night and is just the king. And so I've always really kind of kept that in the back of my mind. And so that's kind of what the wireless mic thing is like. Now that I do it for two songs, and I kind of go out there and it's, I don't know if I'd, it's not that I feel naked, but it's almost like in the back of my mind, like I shouldn't be doing this. But I've kind of really grown to enjoy it. Because like not having to play guitar and sing at the same time, it's really easy. It's really nice to just sing. So I don't know. It's kind of like a constant complex I have with myself and going out there and doing it.
Was it a ladder step to sell out Billy Bob's?
For sure. I mean, listening to Randy Rogers live at Billy Bob's, Crossing Ragweed live at Billy Bob's, Stoney LaRue live at Billy Bob's, like those are records when I was in like fifth grade, dude, I would put the CD in my boom box and in my room, and I was just obsessed with them. And so when we played on the Honky Tonk stage, which is like the small stage up front, and we did like 2,000 people showed up. Which was a huge deal for us. I mean, that was humongous for us. And they paid us like 10 grand, dude. And I was like, in cash. And I was like, dude, we can retire. Like, we're good. And so we went back one more time, played the main stage, and we didn't sell it out. And then we went and played the main stage again and sold it out in advance. And that was, like, to have your handprints on the wall and all that, if you grew up in Texas idolizing Texas singer-songwriters, that's a big deal for you.
I would think so, too, especially being a Texas kid, right? And I was a Texas transplant, but I definitely had that in me. And it was like, man, if you go and sell, and I think you sold Billy Bob's twice, right?
Mm-hmm.
And later on in life, as you sell out bigger and bigger places, that'll still be a freaking cool thing.
For sure. I mean, it was just something like, it was kind of like playing the Opry. You know, it's something that it's always kind of in the back of your mind, but you don't know if it'll ever happen. And two, you feel like it's 100 years away. And then all of a sudden it happens and you're like, holy cow, dude.
The Gold Chain Cowboy? Is that what it is? GCC? Yeah. I voted for that one on Twitter.
I appreciate it.
Yeah, and I was like, it can't be any of these other choices that you've picked. Like, that was the legit best title for the next project. Where are we on that?
Man, we just finished it yesterday.
Oh, congratulations. Man, all tracking, all vocal, everything's done.
I sang the last two songs. Sang the last two songs yesterday.
And the light of day for one of those tracks, do we know when?
We have a song coming out this month.
Okay.
So
you don't have to tell me. I'm not
I always want to tell. I'm always getting texts from Enzo or Matthew or the label, and they're like, delete that. Because I always want to tell everybody. Because, I mean, dude, they're messaging me every day by the hundreds saying, we want more music. Like 3 weeks after Hollywood Gold came out, they're like, okay, cool. When's the next one? And I'm like, well, dude, being on a major label, probably 5 years. No, I'm just kidding. But
not it's, really.
I think the record comes out in July as of right now. And so we're kind of really what we're trying to decide right now is whether it's going to be another 6-song EP or whether it's going to be the full album. Because I've got about, I don't know, 14 songs, maybe 16 songs, totally ready to rock and roll.
What's your gut tell you to do?
I don't know. And my thing is kind of like, and you know, it doesn't matter what it is nowadays. whether it's your album or like a tragic event, like the public is over it in like 48 hours. They're on to the next thing. And so I think a lot of the kind of strategy and a lot of the thought process behind releasing music nowadays is, you know, less songs, a smaller collection of songs, so an EP. And then that way, so if you put out an album, right, you probably don't put out another full album for 2 years or at least a year. And so if you put out an EP in the spring and then you put out an EP in the fall, it gives you two chances to be relevant throughout the year, two chances to have something fresh coming out. So it makes a lot of sense. But I grew up, I just wanted to make records. Like I always wanted to write an album, record that album, put it out, go do it again. But it does make sense to put out six just powerhouse songs. And then, but I kind of told the label, I was like, I want to put out a full album.
You did?
Yeah.
As a consumer, I don't want my favorite artist to put out a full record if they can put out a couple, six, seven song EPs. Mm-hmm. I feel like even as with my favorite artists, there are some tracks I just don't spend enough time with because there's 12 or 13 and I'm rolling through them.
Yeah.
And I'm just like, I don't know if I like that one. I feel like maybe I'm missing some greatness because they've put out too many at one time.
Yeah. Or it's like, you ever notice, like I do this with John Mayer a lot. He's like, him and George Strait are my top two all time. And every time he puts out a record, like I fall in love with the whole thing, but I have my favorite songs. And then, you know, whether it's 3 months later or 6 months later, all of a sudden, like all the songs that weren't my favorite, I'm like, golly, those are good.
Like, how did I miss out? Same way.
You fall in love with those. Like, you just weren't, it wasn't the right time for you where you were in your life for those songs. And then, so I'm like, for a full album, hopefully that's what my fans will do with a full album. You know, maybe by Christmas, they'll be like, man, dude, the B-side's really good.
I'm going to end on this. I was giving you a hard time on a radio show about this. You had crushed at Nutty Brown, and it was the first time they'd opened up.
So, like 10 people sent me.
You had crushed at Nutty Brown. You two shows, full capacity. The whole story was freaking Parker McCollum comes in, sells out Nutty Brown two times. And then at the end, it goes, yeah, but still holding the record for one show is Bobby Bones.
Yeah.
And I only would have busted your balls because it was you. Anybody else, I'd have been like, but I like you, I thought you deserved it. So
thank you, man. I appreciate it.
I still hold the record at Nutty Brown for single show.
Yeah. I saw my Uncle John sent it to me. My dad sent it to me. My uncle sent it to me. Or my other uncle sent it to me.
I love your family. Listen, I'm falling in love with this family. Dude, this interview is going.
I was on the phone with my mom while I was pulling in. I was like, hey, I'm pulling up to Bobby Bones' house. I'm doing this podcast. I got to hop off the phone. And she's like, oh, he's just the cutest thing in the world. Tell him I love him.
I can't disagree. And I think I love your family. I'm proud of the success that you have. And
thank you, man.
And I love your confidence. Like, it's so refreshing for someone to know what they can give and then not only give that, but more. And I feel like that's what you're doing.
Thank you, man. That means a lot.
Like, it's refreshing to hear honesty from someone talking about their craft and their art who is really good and says, you know what, I am really good and I'm about to get better and I'm going to do it because I'm working hard and I'm getting better at the craft for no other reason. It's not, listen, I'm just naturally good, watch me. It's like, hey, I'm getting better. I moved here to challenge myself. So, you know, I love to see it from an artist. I love to see it from, you know, from you. You know, anybody coming from, you know, from Texas, especially Austin, like
that's, it's
just an extra layer to it. But congratulations on all the success. And I'll end this the way I started it. Like, it says so much about you and your team's character for you to stay on as the baby act on a major tour. Because you are literally passing up money.
Yeah.
Thousands and tens of thousands, maybe six figures. Yes, for sure six figures. You're passing that up to go, I said this, I'm going to do this. And you don't even have to respond to that, but that says a lot about you. Enzo says a lot about you guys. And Just really cool.
Thank you, man.
So you have a humongous truck.
It's not that big.
Thing's a monster. Did you see it?
It is. It's big.
I walked over. I pulled up and I walked in and I was like, they said, Parker's over at the other house. And I walked over there and I was like, well, there's Parker's truck right there. Did you drive that up? You bought that in Texas? Drove it up here?
I did. Yes, sir.
Jesus Christ.
Yeah. And it got smashed. The night I moved out of that condo downtown into my house here, someone smashed in the back window. So I was like,
Trying to steal from it?
Yeah.
Like busting,
you know, like
it
the sliding back window?
Yeah, yeah.
Yeah, they just kicked it
did
in.
Did they take anything out?
There was nothing. My truck's been broken into so many times. I had a brand new F-250 King Ranch that was stolen the second day I had it.
The truck was stolen?
Oh, yes. Oh, yeah.
Did they, would you leave the keys in it?
Yeah,
they just
both sets with the paperwork. Oh, yeah.
You really showed them, didn't you?
Oh, yeah. And I ended up finding it 6 weeks later, like 100 yards down the road. True story.
Why? What happened there?
Man, I was headed to bus call, and I'd been looking for King Ranch F-250 all over Austin with paper plates. I'd been looking for it everywhere. I was headed to bus call right there at South Congress in Barton Springs. You know where that Chevron is, that gas station?
I do.
It was in the parking lot. And I'm sitting at the stoplight, headed to the bus, and I'm like, I was headed to start the Naughty or Nice tour with my buddy Co Wetzel. And I look over, and I'm like, King Ranch, paper plates. Huh. I was like, well, it's worth it. And I pull in, and I had just bought a deer stand that day that the truck was stolen, and the box that it was in, it was a tree stand, and the cardboard it was in was sticking up out of the bed, and my stomach just dropped. And I was like, oh, holy shit, this is my truck.
Why would they leave it there, and was it damaged?
I think the guy had, when he stole it, he went and hid it somewhere. And I think it just so happened that when he went to get it and pulled it in there to fill it up that day, that I had been driving by. And so I get out and I'm looking, and I'd just gotten.
You think it just happened to be there when you drove by to see, is that my truck?
The guy that stole it was there. And so, and I was in an identical, I'd gotten a new truck already. Insurance had got me a new truck. I just received the check for that truck that day. It's a brand new $75,000 truck. I was like, the insurance company's going to think I'm full of shit. And I get out and I'm looking at it, and this guy walks up and he's like, hey, you're Parker McCollum, country singer. And I'm going, how in the world does this guy know who I am? He goes, this is your truck. It's been here for 3 weeks. We've been trying to get a hold of you. We knew it was stolen. And I'm going, why wouldn't you call the police? Why? And you know, Austin, you don't park anywhere. You're not supposed to be. They don't tell you. And so, but that guy ended up leaving. And as soon as he left, it started clicking. I'm like, that's the son of a bitch that stole my truck.
That's crazy.
But it was locked. I couldn't get anything out of it. So
what happens then with that other truck? Who takes it?
It's a total loss. They take it and I guess auction it off or take it back to a dealership and resell it or whatever. So, but I had to call the insurance company and be like, no, y'all just sent me the check, but I just found it.
And
so,
what do they say? Sure you did.
Yeah, they're like, I mean, it's a total loss. It's gone.
I follow Parker on Instagram, Parker McCollum. To Be Loved By You Now, Pretty Heart went number one, massive, obviously. Good to see you, my friend.
Man, thank you so much, dude. What a treat.
I see you around. I mean, we just did an hour, basically. I feel like I know you even better than before you walked in here.
Well, I've been a fan for even just getting to play your show that early morning several months ago was such a treat, man. That was really that was kind of like the Billy Bob's thing, man. You just, one of those things you're always like, I wonder if I'll ever get to do that.
Thanks, man. Well, to your mom and your sister who may be listening,
yes,
let
they
me
will
say
be.
Hello. And I'm so happy you both exist. And to the mom, I'm glad you got some good kids. So, all right, there he is, Parker McCollum. Here with Emma Klein, who, just a quick backstory of how we met. Would you like to tell it? Because I have a version.
Yeah, I'll tell my version.
Go ahead.
Okay. So I was doing American Idol, and you are on American Idol, obviously.
I was singing. I was trying to win.
He was my competition, the fiercest competition. But I actually hadn't known you, and my mom was like, oh, Bobby Bones, you gotta look him up. I was like, okay, cool. So I met you briefly during group round, I think, and you were trying to convince me not to sing an original song it wasn't group round, it was the solo round, and I didn't listen to you. And then I did eventually get cut. But then you were like, if you get cut, let me know, and you can come play piano for me. And then I got cut, hit you up on Instagram, was like, he's never going to see this, and then ran into you at Radnor Lake on a hike.
See, my version of the story is actually much better. It's a little glitzier.
Okay, tell the glitz.
I don't remember meeting you at Hollywood Week because they stick me with 10,000 people.
I'm sure.
In 10,000 rooms, they tell me in my ear, they're like, okay.
Did they tell you what to say?
No, okay. But they do say, here's the situation.
Mm.
So they're like prepping me for what I'm walking into, because that's the only time of the whole season when on that show, they just grab my collar and go into this room. Here's what you're going to see.
Yeah.
And I don't know everybody yet.
That's chaotic.
It's chaotic for me too, because I get confused.
Yeah, for you. Yeah.
After Hollywood Week, because Hollywood's chaotic as well, just for you guys.
I cried so much.
You just no sleep. No.
Yeah, I felt
just
like a baby.
Yeah. And so I do not remember that.
Yes.
But I do remember going to Hawaii, which is like, in my mind, the first time that we talked, like actually had a conversation, and you were doing a rehearsal for your Hawaii round, and you crushed your rehearsal, and I was like, God dang. I was like, I don't remember her being that good, but I didn't remember you at all.
Thank you.
Yeah, of course. But I was like, I don't remember
her. I'm glad I'm not memorable.
and you were so good, and I think you did a cover. Did you do a Bob Marley cut?
I did, yeah. Okay. Yeah, Is This Love.
Is This Love, Is This Love, Is
This. Yes, just like that.
And I remember thinking, holy moly. And I told my producer, I was like, how come I haven't spent more time with her? Because you know, everybody's trying to find the people that have a good story or are great singers or might, you're just looking for good television early on.
Right.
And they're like, well, someone said, well, she, we haven't felt like she has made good TV yet because she's been strong, but she hasn't been crazy.
Mm.
She hasn't been one of the like top three or four. They're like, oh, she's going to win.
Right.
Now they were like, but she did, had such a great performance. Let's go talk to her. I was like, great. So when we, you and I did a little talk on camera.
Yes. Yeah.
It wasn't anything big, but we did it in front of the stage, I think, right over there in Hawaii on the stage.
Yeah. 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 We did that.
And I remember going, this is before your performance, because I didn't stick around because I wasn't going to stay all night.
Right.
I had to fly back to Nashville.
Yeah. Oh my God.
Yeah. Listen, it's back and forth
all
for me.
All over the place.
And I remember going, oh, there's no chance she gets cut. Like, she's too good. But I remember telling you, once you told me you lived here because you were going to Belmont.
Yes.
I said,
yeah.
I remember, hey, if you don't make it, when you don't make it, come play with me. Because I thought you played piano because you played it on stage.
No, I didn't play it on stage. What happened was you were like, do you play any instruments?
And is that what
like,
happened?
And I play, and I was like, yeah, I play some guitar, some piano. And that's when it happened.
Mm, okay. Mm-hmm. Well, you fooled me, whatever
yeah,
it was.
Hey,
and to
fake
your credit,
it till you make it.
To your credit, you continued to fake it.
I did.
And so, you did, and then I remember talking to Luke afterward, and I was like, I called him the next day when I saw you didn't make it. I said, why didn't you guys put Emma through? And he was like, man, she was good, and I thought she should go through, but I didn't win that one. And I was like, all right, well, that was it, right?
Mm-hmm.
But I knew that you were back here, and we were putting together the idiots for some big stage shows.
Yes.
And so, did you message me?
I did.
Okay.
Yeah, but I was like, at that point, I think that you had just maybe, like, you had a million followers. So I was like, I mean, it's probably just going to get lost in DM world.
So what I did is I went to your page, click message, and you had sent me a message because I was going to send you a message.
Okay.
But I saw you walking down the random street.
At Radnor.
At Radnor. So and I was in my car, and I was like, Emma? She's walking with, like, a couple other people. She was like, yeah, and I rolled my window down. And I was like, hey, let's go. I'll message you as soon as I leave here.
Okay.
And then that was it.
If I hadn't parked my car exactly where I parked my car, I wouldn't have run into you.
Yeah, I don't know that we would be both sitting here together in that.
That's crazy.
With that happening.
That's
but also,
crazy.
If you wouldn't have signed up for Idol.
Yeah, yeah.
If you wouldn't, but who knows? Maybe if you didn't sign up for Idol, someone else would have found you playing at a bar and you would be selling out Madison Square Garden.
You never know. Crazy.
But we are here. Then you said, oh, yeah, I play piano. And it turns out you didn't really play piano, but she practiced a lot.
So here's the thing.
You played one show with this on piano.
I played a couple. I played one in California with a big band.
But then
I played only, yeah, but I only played one with just you and Eddie.
Got it.
Yes.
And then Walker came in after
that. And then thank God when you were like, do you have Walker's number? And I was like, yes,
I do.
And
then she opened a whole tour for us. So we spent 5 months together, basically.
Yes.
Okay.
I was quite happy to open for you. I think that it was the best option for me.
Now we're here. That's how we met. Yep. You are out of school now.
Yes.
You have a big fancy publishing deal where they're paying you to write songs. When I met you, you were working as a waiter at some fancy Spanish restaurant place.
Barcelona Wine Bar. So good. Have you ever been there?
I don't think so.
It's like tapas bar. So
you don't work there anymore. You don't have to sell it anymore, but I get
well,
it.
I still get half off sometimes.
Yeah.
There's the right managers there, so I...
Well, she's all fancy now, Mike. She's writing songs. But there's a reason you're actually here today now that we've caught up. You just put out a new EP.
Yes.
Yeah. Love Me Too?
Mm-hmm.
Why Love Me Too? What's that? What'd you name it that for?
So
I know it's the name of a track, but like, why would you pick that as the encompassing album name?
For sure. So the whole EP is basically the story of a relationship, and it was back in college, and just kind of me coming in and out of like one bad relationship from before college and then that one in college, whatever. So long story short, like just kind of searching for love and all these other places that were outside of myself. And I think that I was just in this headspace for a while where I was, I don't want to say desperate, but I just was like lonely, which is a normal human thing, but I just, I never was comfortable being alone with myself. And then I wrote that song, Love Me Too. And it's just all about like, after this whole series of love stories about me struggling with like other people, it's like, I gotta love me too. So that's why.
There are five tracks.
Yep.
Here is track one, Call It What It Is.
Can we just call it what it is? Everyone knows it's obvious, but you make it a mystery. Like one and one ain't easy. It's
So this was, in my mind, the first one that was existing.
Yes.
Yeah?
This came out like 2 years ago.
Yeah, I used to play it at shows.
Yep.
And I was like, dang, then we started playing it on the national weekend shows.
Yep.
And you would be like, I randomly used, my Spotify gets a big spike for some reason. She's like, I'll just, like on a random Sunday, I'll look and there's a huge spike. And I'm like, yeah, but we're playing it on the national show. People hear it. That's what happens. That's how it's supposed to work. People hear it and they go, oh, that's cool. Let me go find it. They listen to it.
It's magic.
It is magic. That is track one. Here is track two, Butterflies. So that song is about you not having butterflies anymore because it's over.
Yes. Yes. It's the coffee closure talk and realizing the butterflies are gone.
Is this chronological?
Yeah. Well, okay. So here's the thing. Actually, I accidentally put the wrong order out on Spotify and we're rearranging it. So technically, Off My Mind comes before Butterflies.
Well, I was going to say, because Butterflies seems a little early.
Yep.
In the whole, unless you like murder them in track five. It's like, I don't understand that arc.
Yeah. So it's actually supposed to be called what it is, Off My Mind, then Butterflies. Mm-hmm. So we're going to switch. It's going to get fixed eventually. But just so for, yeah, thank you for that.
Yeah. Here is Off My Mind, track three.
Broken heart to the other side, but the world I fought, I left you behind. It's a tattoo.
Good one.
Thank you.
Yeah, you're quite the little songwriter there.
Thank you so much. That was a song that was like, I want to write songs forever.
Really?
Yeah.
I'm reading this. Mike posted a note about you here. It says you were prompted, just to go back to Idol for just one split second, prompted by your friend Walker Burrows. I didn't know he actually got you to do that.
Yeah.
Was he the season before you?
No, we were the same season. We were in an a cappella group together. And he texted me, it was actually while I was serving at Barcelona. He's like, I got an Idol audition tomorrow. You should totally come try out. And I was like, I've tried out for those shows like so many times. I was like, it's fine. And then he's like, no, seriously, it's easy peasy. It's like just at the hotel this week. So I did it. So, yep, he got me to come along and we got to do that together. So it was pretty cool.
I didn't know that was, I thought you guys just knew each other from back home. I didn't know there actually was a hand in getting you to come on the show.
It was wild. Walker and I, like, seriously, like our paths crossing, it's kind of the same thing as us. It's like it was just crazy. For the past 3 years, we've both been having the same opportunities come up. So it just was awesome to have a friend through all of that.
I hired Walker to play at Caitlin's sister's wedding.
You did?
Mm-hmm.
Did he already play there?
Mm-mm, it's in like 3 weeks. When's your wedding? June what?
June 5th.
It's like the week after?
Yeah.
That's amazing.
So.
Oh, yeah.
Caitlin's sister loves Walker. And I got to know Walker quite well on mm-hmm. Idol. I mean, that's why he's basically the third idiot at this point.
Yeah.
If we're playing, Walker's with us.
Yep.
But I didn't know Walker was the one. Oh, here's what it says. It says, Walker Burrows got you in to American Idol, where her vocal talent entranced Bobby Bones. Who wrote that?
It was me.
Yeah. Who then took her to open for the Raging Idiots tour until the pandemic. That is true.
Mm-hmm. Yep.
Let's see. It was on the stage in 2019 that Emma Klein revealed her underpinned inspiration for her second try at the show. Let's see, Off My Mind. And then it goes on to stuff. Okay, let's do another song here. Down. Give me some of Down.
Down, down, down.
Baby, I'm so afraid. If you keep me around till day breaks, will you still feel the way you do? I've been building up a fortress for so long now. How do I tear it all down, 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 down? Maybe it's the
moon. I start crying right now on the interview. And then here's the final track, Love Me Too.
Somebody, really anybody will do. Is there someone who wants to be loved who can love me too?
Dang, hit him like that.
You're moving hit him
on,
like that.
But you're looking for something else. Do you talk about your boyfriend now?
Oh, do I want to talk about my boyfriend?
No, do you?
Oh, no, I don't. I don't.
Not at all.
No, not at all.
Good for
but
you.
But it's great.
And hold to it.
He plays drums for me, so he gets to play all of these songs.
No, 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 no. Do you talk about him in public if someone asks you? Like, if I were to go, do you have a boyfriend? What would you say?
Oh, yeah.
Okay.
Yeah, for sure.
I mean, I've seen him on your social media. I know, I've met him.
Oh, yeah.
But I don't know in an interview setting if you go.
Oh, yes. Well, I'll talk about him.
Okay.
How long? I don't care.
And what does he think about you doing a whole EP about?
My ex.
Yeah.
He actually just, we just did a music video and I hired Garrett. Well, I didn't hire him. He worked for free. And he played my ex in the music video.
Your current played your ex.
Yes. He's a good sport.
And how is that relationship going?
It's going great.
Because you guys started being together whenever you were still out with me.
Yeah. Yep.
And you're still good.
We're still good. It's so easy. It's like so funny. It's just easy peasy.
Do you ever go, it's been tough though. I was just kind of thinking of your last year or so because you've kind of really started to figure out who you are and you're writing and you've mm-hmm. been dedicated to music almost solely. I was going to ask you, like, if you go somewhere and you're like, yeah, I'm an artist in Nashville or a songwriter, how people react to that. But I guess you haven't been a lot of places.
Yeah, I mean, it's kind of insane. Like, I graduated Belmont. I actually missed graduation because of American Idol. And I had been fully anticipating traveling. Like, I'd been saving money. I was going to go travel in Europe for like 6 months and just do whatever. Come back, try to get a pub deal eventually. But it was just one thing after the next after the next. And then I signed a pub deal, got off tour with you, and then the pandemic hit. So it's crazy how it happened that way.
Are you still writing on Zoom at all, or are you back in?
Pretty much back in person. Most people are either fully vaccinated or, you know, mask on, whatever. And we've been writing in person again, which is nice. You don't deal with the Zoom lag of a guitar anymore.
Yeah, that sucks.
That's been hard.
And it's kind of hard to sing along with somebody. If you're like, if they're playing and you're kind of, you know, chasing a melody and you can't really match it because there's a little lag.
It's so hard, especially if you're working with a producer during a Zoom write because they're on their computer. So you kind of get the lag from their computer and you sing. But I actually had my first like legit cut on a Zoom write. Hannah Kerr, a Christian artist.
I know Hannah. I know Hannah.
Yeah.
Yeah.
She's great. So she cut, it's called Same God. And that like hit top 40 a couple weeks ago. So that was super
How
exciting.
Cool is that?
I was like, what the heck, a Zoom write?
Just a write, period. Is that your first cut?
Yeah.
That's
yeah.
not you?
Yeah. I've done a couple for like friends. So it's not technically my first cut. Like that went to Belmont, but that's my first like.
First Nashville major, cut.
First
of somebody
Nashville cut. Yeah.
That you couldn't possibly be a roommate with.
Exactly. Exactly.
That's really cool.
Isn't that awesome?
Congratulations.
Thank you
haven't
so
even had
much.
A pub deal, but about a year, right?
Yeah. Or it's been a little bit over a year now.
Dang. Down. We're playing Down on the Country Top 30, right?
We are.
Oh, sweet.
Did you not know that?
I did not know that.
When is that? Next
weekend.
Okay.
Wait,
sick.
Not this weekend.
Not this weekend. The following one.
Yeah, but I'm confused because this show airs on Friday, but still it's the same. Not this weekend.
Correct.
But the next. So we're going to.
Okay.
You will be highlighted
Thank
on the biggest countdown in America.
Thank you so much.
And Down will be played and you will be our spotlight artist.
So I can expect to have a random increase in.
Not only that, we're also playing the song on the Women of iHeart Country.
Thank
as
you.
As well.
Thank you. Thank you.
So there you go. A little, you get a play. You get
yes.
a spin. You get a spin.
I really appreciate
what,
it.
What's happening now with you as an artist?
So.
Because I know you wrote this, you sang this, and what I mean is you have a publishing deal and you're writing songs for other folks. Like, are you going to go try to play and travel? And what's the deal?
Yeah, I would love to tour again as soon as possible, open for somebody. I would love to think about record deal in the next year or two. Just talk to more people. But honestly, yeah, just I think that I struggle in writing rooms to write for myself. I really love writing for other artists when I get in a room. And I think that's probably because it's a little bit harder for me to, like, trust the process, like, putting it in someone else's hands, like my own artist stuff. So I'm getting a little bit more comfortable with that each write. And so I'm hoping to write a little bit more for myself in rooms and also find some good producers to do the next project with.
What is your, let me look at your streams here.
Yeah, definitely call it what it is. Hit it the best because of your help.
No. Yes.
I think it's
I agree, but it's also a great song.
It's an upbeat one, you know, so that's always fun. People don't always like to be as sad as I like to write songs about. Like that your phone case matches your jacket.
It does.
Why red?
Why? It's the only color I can really see.
Are you colorblind?
Yeah, crazily.
I didn't know that. Mm-hmm,
crazily. I was looking. Here's Mike, when you pull up The Raging Idiots, you have another cut, too, that you forgot about.
Oh, it's not you, it's me.
No, two other cuts.
Wait, what's
More than that. Mike, if you'll pull it up, the intro song to our entire stage show,
yes.
which is like a little Broadway number where Eddie and I come out separately. It's called I'm Here. I remember sitting at the house and
writing that song.
Me, you, and Eddie wrote it. And then, but Walker performed it.
Yes.
But we sat there with keys and just clunked around. And I was like, I want it to be some kind of like.
And remember, I forgot my piano to the right. Do you remember that? I was late. I was an hour late and I forgot my piano.
Why were you an hour late? Why did I ever talk to you again?
I didn't know what time. I knew it was at like Tuesday at 2, but I thought it was a Monday. I thought that like the current day was a Monday. So you called and I was like, yeah, it's at on Tuesday. You're like, today is Tuesday. I was like, no.
Okay, yeah, rewind that on up. You play it from the beginning. So here, let me teach you this here. We're out. You can pause it for a second. It's dark except for two large hanging men, one red and one green with like a stick outline. Mm-hmm. And then the keys go, run, dun, dun, dun. And this was the intro to our entire comedy music show. All right. Eddie's out first. They cheer loud when he comes out.
I'm here. I'm here. I hope that you're ready. I'm here. I'm here. It's your favorite Mexican, Eddie. We're going to sing some songs. You're going to sing along. And if you think Bobby can sing, well, you're wrong. That's why he brought me along. I'm here. I'm here.
And then I'm going to come out of the other side and the crowd will cheer.
It's all edited in there.
Yeah, yeah, we did this now.
I'm here, I'm here. Some people think I'm a weenie. I'm here, because they saw me dancing on TV. I got a mirror ball, I can't see it all. I can't get a girl to give me a call. That's why I brought him along. But
and then it goes on and on and on and on. But that's how we started the show, and we wrote that at the very beginning.
Yep.
You came over, like, all right, we're going to do this. Let's write an intro song to the whole stage show. Because it wasn't just me doing stand-up, Rush just playing songs. There was kind of a comedy, you know, an entire little strain we created.
I remember we had also written a song about a turkey on Thanksgiving. Mm-hmm.
We had a Thanksgiving. But here's the thing about records. You write a bunch of songs, some of them just don't make it. We were doing it, trying to find a Thanksgiving song, Mike.
Nice.
You'd have been like, where'd
that
one go?
My dad did play it on Thanksgiving. I had the little voice memo, and he loves you. My dad was like, you need to give Bobby. My dad always is buying you presents, so he's got one for you for your wedding.
Nice.
We'll get here eventually.
And then we wrote It's Not You, It's Me. We wrote that together?
No.
Or did you just sing that?
I just sang that, yeah.
Dang. But you did get a cut on I'm Here.
Yes.
Yeah, there you see?
Yes. And I loved singing the It's Not You, It's Me. That was so fun.
This one?
Mm-hmm.
It's a love song. The crowd's like, oh.
And I don't wanna break your heart. And I know it's gonna sound cliche, but I don't know what else to say. It's not you, it's me. I just don't like dating losers. You're my least favorite.
Good
great
enough.
Song. Great song.
Good enough. They should come out at the end and they'd laugh, and that was it. Well, listen, you're doing great.
Thank you.
You're just a kid, 24 years old. And are you staying in Nashville?
Yeah, I'm staying in Nashville. I'm hoping that eventually I can kind of go back and forth between LA. Maybe eventually London would be really cool. But just that was a really cool thing about Zoom Writes, was how much we got to go, like, people I would only get to write with in person in LA, suddenly we were now like, okay, cool, let's just Zoom. We might as well, we can. So now I'm like, okay, cool, I have a couple friends that live there now, so that'll be nice.
And you're going to go out on the road and try to play some shows?
Yep. I'll keep you updated.
All right.
Anybody out there need me?
Well, nobody actually hears this. We just keep this for us and listen to it at the end of the week.
Yeah, I haven't been recording this.
Yeah. We just kind of talk about it. Like, remember that? Tashi said that?
Hey, yeah.
Yeah.
You just use it as your sleep noise.
You guys, check out Love Me Too. It's 5 songs. Were you writing today?
No.
Okay. You didn't leave a write to come do this.
No. This was my only thing today.
A thing about Emma, she's so good, and I can't wait for whenever you become a big star to go. She used to come to my house at 1 a.m. and walk Stanley.
Yes, I did. Crashed my car doing it.
That's right. Oh, I forgot about that.
Yeah.
She had a key to the house, and Stanley was a puppy.
Mm-hmm.
And he was just a dick. And Emma would come at 1 o'clock in the morning, because, you know, I'd go to bed early and have to get up and go to work. And
yep.
She'd come and walk, take him outside and let him use the bathroom at 1 a.m. and you wrecked your car. That's like a fender bender, right? Tell me that story.
So I actually, Nolensville and Thompson in Nashville, everyone watch out when you're driving through that intersection, because I got in two accidents in 2 days back to back in that intersection. The first one, I was driving to your house. It was probably me and one other car, and they're like in the left turn lane, and I'm in like there's like a left turn lane, two middle lanes, and then one right turn lane. They were in the left turn lane. They decided last minute through the light to just that they wanted to turn right. I just didn't have time to stop. So like we hit, it was crazy. I was actually with Walker. We were both fine. So that was good. I actually still have my little rear view mirror from that car. Loved that car. But I was okay. So I was good. That's my whole story for you.
Nice.
Very exciting.
And we'll wrap with that. You always want to end on a high note.
Yeah.
And we didn't get to this show, but maybe next one, Mike. All right, you guys follow Emma. I am Emma Klein. I am Emma K-L-E-I-N. I play her because I think she's so great.
Thank you.
I wish we got to hang out more. I rarely get to see you anymore.
Hey, I'll
just,
come
you're
over.
Just, you're just a big star now. No, you won't walk the dog. You won't do anything.
I would actually love to come over and cook with Caitlin sometime, hang out with the dogs. You just let me know.
All right.
I'm available.
You guys check out Love Me Too. It's five songs that are slightly out of order, but they're going to be in order soon.
Yes.
Yes. And all right, that's it. Follow her, listen to her, support her, and I'll see you soon.
Thank you.
This is the year to stop overpaying for your family plan. So choose a Straight Talk Wireless family plan. Unlimited data, talk, and text on a reliable 5G network. And you can get a new line starting at $25 per line per month for four lines, plus taxes and fees and no contracts. That's good decision making. Available at Walmart and on straighttalk.com. Family plan discount with four lines, all on the Silver Unlimited plan. Not combinable with auto pay discount. In times of traffic, your data may be temporarily slower than other traffic. Video streams at up to 480p. This festival and concert season will be all about the boots, and Tecovas is your stop before attending your next concert. All Tecovas boots are made by hand in a time-honored tradition with timeless styles that are always on trend. And Tecovas has first wear comfort with little to no break-in period. Stop by your local Tecovas store, have a complimentary drink, shop new styles. If you can't make it to a store, just visit tecovas.com. TECOVAS.com. You can probably spell it. You probably know it. Tecovas.com. Find your new favorite pair of boots today.
Lucky Land Casino, asking people, what's the weirdest place you've gotten lucky?
Lucky? In line at the deli, I guess?
Aha, in my dentist's office. More than once, actually.
Do I have to say?
Yes, you do.
In the car, before my kids' PTA meeting.
Really?
Yes.
Excuse me, what's the weirdest place you've gotten lucky?
I never win and tell.
Well, there you have it. You can get lucky anywhere, playing at LuckyLandSlots.com. Play for free right now. Are you feeling lucky? No purchase necessary. Void where prohibited by law. 18 plus. Terms and conditions apply. See website for details.